भगवान की। अनंत कोटि वैष्णविंद की नम आचार्य सुनहरदास ठाकुर की राम से कुछ कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री रैत करान हर्ष वसुर गौर भक्तविंद की जय। श्री राधे गोविंद गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधिकुंड गिरि गौरान की वृंदावन धाम की श्रीमद पूर्ण विदिप धाम की जुमनमयी की गंगमयी की भक्ति देवी की संबीर भक्तविंद की तुलसी महारानी की श्री श्री गौणिका की श्री जगन्नाथ देव सुबर देव की श्री श्री राधे गौकुम नंद की हरिनाम संकीर्तन की संकीर्तन यज्ञ की नित्य गौर प्रेमानंद। All glories to the Samudra Bhutis, all glories to the Samudra Bhutis, all glories to the Samudra Bhutis, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. Does anybody know where we can get a Sri Isha Upanishad? Oh, there's one on the book table, huh? So, let's see. Some of you were not here last night. I'll cover some of that very briefly. Last night I gave an introduction to culture. We discussed the culture of Bhagavad Gita. Let's put it that way. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parityagam Amikam Swarnam Braja. Give up all varieties of religion, surrender unto me. You familiar with the Gita, son?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you?
Yes.
Okay. So, this final instruction, Krishna, it's Sarva Dharma, all. Sarva is all. Dharma, Prabhupada translates as religion, but Dharma also means those things that we think we are supposed to do. So, Krishna is telling us all these things that you think you are supposed to do for whatever reason that you give up, and Mama Kam Sarnam Braja, surrender unto me. Why don't you join us over here? Bring a chair if you like, okay? I get more reciprocation with people when they're closer. So now we want to understand, what does that mean for us? What kind of dharmas is Krishna telling us to give up? And we gave some examples of different aspects of our culture. Culture is very difficult to understand because it's invisible to us for the most part. We are raised in it from the time we're very young, from the time we're born, and for that reason it becomes almost invisible to us. It's just the way we think, the way things are, the way we are supposed to behave, and we don't think twice about it. But Krishna, he's giving us instructions in the Bhagavad Gita that run directly counter to our material experience. For example, he tells us that we're not the body. This is his first instruction in Bhagavad Gita. You're not the body. When this is, for many people, runs counter to their idea of self. They think they are the body or they are the mind. And so Krishna is, he's giving us a new way of seeing and understanding, and what we are meant to do is to give up our previous way of understanding and adopt Krishna's way of seeing things. When we do that, we can come close to the absolute truth. We can give up our illusion and come closer to the truth. This is called the process of self-realization. So the first instruction is, we are not the body. And the second instruction also deals with our material ego, which runs on two tracks. Do you know those parts of false ego? Yeah, two different aspects of our false ego. I and?
Mine.
I and mine. Okay. Prabhupada writes over and over about I and mine. So these are the first two things that Krishna deals with in the Gita. I and mine. First, we are not the body. And second thing, that the things that we think we own, they don't belong to us. Right? We identify with things that we have as part of ourself. Bhagavatam calls this fallible soldiers. I identify with my house, with my car, with the amount of money that I have. And if I have more, then I think I am more. This is false ego. This is illusion. So Bhagavad Gita is meant to help us to give up our illusions and come closer to the truth. So Krishna instructs us, the first instruction about economics in Bhagavad Gita is text 247. Karmani varikaraste ma palesu kadachana ma karma palahitu burma te sangostu karmani. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities and never be attached to not doing your duty. So this instruction is directly counter to modern life. Everybody's working for the fruits of action. We're made, the whole society is designed to increase this sense of I and mine, to get more, to have more. In this way we think we are more. But Krishna tells us that you're working, but the results of your work, it's not for you. And the reason for that is, and he goes on to elaborate, he says, kripana palahitava, that those who want the fruits of their work, they're misers. Now, we have to understand that this human life has a purpose. It's like a vehicle. It can fulfill a very wonderful purpose of delivering us from this material world, taking us back to Godhead. And that's its highest and best use. If we don't use human life for that purpose, we've misused a very valuable thing. So Krishna goes on to elaborate throughout the Gita that human life is meant for sacrifice and for engaging in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. When we do that, we can free ourselves from the bondage of work. So many, many lifetimes we've been engaged in fruitive activity. We want the results. Maybe some of you have seen this, I guess it came out as video first, The Secret. No? Anybody see it? Oh, okay. You're an unusual crowd. In Europe, a lot of people have heard of it, and many have seen it, not everybody. This is actually old wine in new bottles. The Secret is in the New Age circles, they would call it manifesting, right? How to get what you want by the subtle action of thinking, feeling, and willing. There's actually another book by the title of Spiritual Economics that was printed more than 20 years ago, which talks about how to manifest your desires. So the secret is the same thing, that simply by desiring something, you can call it into being. Now, the problem is that in that movie, in that video, they don't tell you that if you don't get that result in this lifetime, because you don't have the karma for it, you're going to have to come back again in the future, in another lifetime, to get that thing. So they don't say that. But the question is, do you really want it that bad?
You can cancel things out.
Yeah, you know, go through birth, death, disease, and old age again so that you can have that Mercedes or yacht or big house on the hill, whatever it is that you wanted. Mm-hmm. So this is karma. This is the law of karma. That according to our desire, man proposes, God disposes. So Krishna is so kind to us that whatever we want, any little thing, He's willing to give to us. And this can be very, very subtle, and it can also be negative as well as positive. I can give you a few examples. In 1982, I was sitting in the Miami Temple, The Miami Temple at that time was on the Miami Beach in Florida. It was a former hotel, 8 stories high. I was sitting in one room. In the room I was sitting in, I was looking into the offices of the BBT, which was housed in the Miami Temple at that time. Hridayananda, Gopi Puranadana, they were translating the 10th, 11th, and 12th cantos of the Bhagavatam. So the BBT offices, they always had nice artwork, you know, because BBT is where that stuff originates. So I was thinking, oh, wouldn't it be nice to work with the BBT? Just a passing thought. It wasn't really a serious thought. But it was just like, yeah, that'd be really nice, you know. And I was just kept chanting my japa. So it wasn't even less than a year later, I had wound up getting divorced from my wife, and they needed a manager to work in the BBT. So they asked me, will you come and manage the BBT? So, just a simple passing thought. Years later, I was trying to find some place. I got lost, and I turned around in a cul-de-sac in a business park. And I went in front of a company by the name of Johnson Controls. And I had read that Johnson Controls is one of the nicest companies in America to work for. And so when I saw the sign, I was thinking like that again. Oh, what would it be like to work for Johnson Control? Huh? Well, it was probably about 2 or 3 years later. I was in Michigan, the other side of the country, and I was looking for a temp job, and they sent me to this place. It was Johnson Control. And within 15 minutes, I got a job. So you see, even these subtle, insignificant thoughts that we have, they can turn into reality. It happens in the negative also. Before I became a devotee, my hobby was skydiving. And I didn't know these principles at that time. And for some reason or other, I would daydream about having near-death experiences skydiving, you know, close calls, or maybe, you know, the parachute didn't work, and like that. So I would daydream like this, and I didn't realize that I was actually calling death closer. And I started to have a series of very close calls where I could have very easily been killed. But just at that time, I was becoming a devotee, and so I stopped that sport. And I'm convinced that if I had not stopped, I probably would have created my own death unconsciously simply by thinking about this in a very, you know, just daydreaming, right? So this is karma. It works. Whatever we're thinking about, we can attract. And if we don't get it in this life, I would say according to our karma, we can get things in this life. Or if it's not in our karma, we have to come back again to get it. So, how did I get there? Oh yeah. So Krishna's telling us how to use this human form of life. Don't use it for karma, for your material things, whatever you want. We should understand that this body can give us eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. If we don't use it for that, then we're misusing or wasting a wonderful opportunity. So, now, we know that it's said that if in the Vedas, if they want to emphasize something, they say it 3 times, right? Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nisteva, 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 Gatira, Nyata. Huh? In this age of Kali, there is no other... The chanting of Hare Krishna is the only way for self-realization. Harinam, 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 3 times. Kalo, Nisteva, Nisteva, Nisteva. No other way, no other way, no other way. So it's emphasized. Now, when Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita that we're not entitled to the fruits of action, how many times does he say it for emphasis? 16 times. Again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Huh? He said, you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. Huh? He repeats that message again and again So that we can try to understand that it's not for us. Who is it for? In 3:8, Krishna explains, Yajnartat karma nonyatra, lokayam karma bandana, tadartam karma kuntaya, mukta sangha samachara. The work must be done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, otherwise that work binds us to this material world. It forces us to come back. Therefore, Sangha Kunti performing prescribed duties for his satisfaction. So whatever we're doing, we should do for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, offering the results to him for his satisfaction, and then we accept the results, or the remnants, as his prasadam. Now, we know how to do that with foodstuff, right? We take food, we cook it, we offer it to the deities. But actually we can do anything can be offered to the deities, and then we can accept the results as Krishna prasad. Malati, if you sit over here, can you sit over here? Then I don't have to keep going like this. Okay? Prabhupada, one time he was making a concession. He says, okay, they if they want to have factories, let them keep a factory. But then we should install Gornitai deities at the end of the factory line, and whenever anything comes off the factory line, it should be offered to Gornitai, and then the result distributed is Krishna prasadam. So whatever it is, you know, carburetors or automobiles or, you know, wood or anything. So everything can be offered, done as an offering to Krishna, and then the results received is his prasadam. This then is spiritual economics, doing everything for Krishna's satisfaction. So today I want to read, we'll read some more verses from Bhagavad Gita that explain economics. And you can follow along with me. There's many such verses. First, we're going to read from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text 247 to 51. And so you open up there and then you read it along with me. We'll cover it. What I want you to pay attention to while we read this is whatever those buzzwords are where Krishna speaks about economics. Okay? Work, the results of work, duty, these kinds of things. These are all relate to economics. Krishna says, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities and never be attached to not doing your duty. Be steadfast in yoga, O Arjuna. Perform your duty and abandon all attachment to success and failure. Such evenness of mind is called yoga. Dhananjaya, rid yourself of all fruitive activities by devotional service and surrender fully to that consciousness. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and actions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, O Arjuna, which is the art of all work. The wise engaged in devotional service take refuge in the Lord and free themselves from the cycle of birth and death by renouncing the fruits of action in the material world. In this way, they attain that state beyond all miseries. So, in these four or five verses, Krishna speaks again and again about economic activity. He says, you're not entitled to the fruits of action. He says, never be attached to not doing your duty. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. Even tells us how to rid ourselves of the results of fruitive actions. And that one should renounce the fruits of action in the material world. So he's repeating the same thing again and again, even in these first few verses. Now we can go to chapter 3. And we'll read some more. Text number 8 and 9. Krishna says, there, perform your prescribed duty, for action is better than inaction. A man cannot even maintain his physical body without work. Work done as the sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed, otherwise work binds one to this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. Actually, we see that these terms relating to economic activity come up in every chapter of the Gita. In the next chapter, in chapter 4, text 19 to 21, one is understood to be in full knowledge whose every act is devoid of the desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker whose fruit of action is burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruit of action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. So again, there, speaking so much about economics. And then finally, 5.12, Krishna says, the steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the results of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. And then one more, 5.25. One who is beyond duality and doubt, whose mind is engaged within, who is always busy working for the welfare of all sentient beings, and who is free from all sins, achieves liberation in the Supreme. Now, just from what Krishna is saying in this small collection of verses, he actually defines an entire economic system. So if we understand economics in the sense to be the production and distribution of goods and services, we want to see what does that economic system look like. Like we were saying yesterday, what we want to do is to adjust ourselves to Bhagavad Gita, not try to make Bhagavad Gita adjusted to our own understanding. So if we see Krishna's defining an economic system, then we have to see what do we have to do to actually establish that. So there's five different, five separate key elements of this economic system. The first one is that a person must always be engaged in some kind of activity. This is called production. So Krishna says, 2.47, never be attached to not doing your duty. In 3.8, perform your prescribed duty. In 5.25, always busy working for the welfare of all sentient beings. So everybody has some work to do. And you may recall Prabhupada writing that in Vedic culture there's no such thing as unemployment. Every person, they have their duty, and the Kshatriya's business is to see that everybody is properly engaged. So, now, what do you do? Whatever you like. You know, just like modern life, nobody tells you have to do this kind of work. You go, you find that kind of work that you like to do. So the same thing here. The other thing is, everyone must be engaged. Second point, the results of our activity do not belong to us. And that's stated again and again. In 2.47, you're not entitled to the fruits of action. 2.49, those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. 2.51, the wise engaged in devotional service free themselves from the cycle of birth and death by renouncing the fruits of action in this world. In 4.20, abandoning all attachment to the results of activities. And in 4.21, giving up all sense of proprietorship over possessions. So Krishna is saying again and again, that the results of our activity do not belong to us. Now, the question then becomes, okay, we're producing something. If it's not meant for us, then what do we do with it? And he explains that the fruits of our activity are meant to be given to others. In 5.25, Krishna says, one who is beyond duality and doubt is always busy working for the welfare of all sentient beings. So this is distribution, right? You produce, you have your duty, you produce, and then distribution is you're busy working for the welfare of others, means whatever you produce is meant for them. Just like in modern society, it's actually no different. You know, people work, they produce something, and generally they're not using what they produce. It's given to others. So, same idea. The next point is, four, our activities should be performed in a spirit of devotional service. Okay, now this is a very important point. In devotional service, there's no buying and selling, right? We don't sell bhoga to the deities, right? No, we give with love. So Krishna says in 3.9, work must be done as a sacrifice for Vishnu. Perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction. In 5.12, the steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the results of all of his activities to me. So we're not selling, we're giving to the deities. And then the deities, they give back prasadam, and that's meant to be distributed to others. And then finally, the fifth point is, one should act only for the bare necessities of life. One should live simply. And Krishna says that in 4.21, a man with understanding acts only for the bare necessities of life. So these 5 points, they make up in an economic system, but it's different from the economic system that we live in today or that we use today. What Krishna is describing here is actually a gift economy. The present economy is based on getting. We're always busy getting money, getting things. But this economy is actually based on giving. We're giving to the deities. Deity gives back his prasadam, and then that's given to others. It's distributed. So it's a gift economy. Very different from what we have now. And some people, they think that a gift economy is utopian, that it doesn't exist. But all of us have experience of a gift economy, right? Where? Who can say?
In the temple?
Yeah, good. There's another place also.
In our homes?
Yeah, very good. In our homes, parents are not selling food to the children. You want to eat tonight? Yeah. Right? No, it's an exchange of love. Whatever we have, we share together. Right? And the same thing in Prabhupada's temple. Prabhupada set up his temples to function on that same basis. That nobody that's here, nobody receives a salary. They accept the minimum necessities of life. A little food, no place to sleep. And they're giving their service, not for some paycheck, but for Krishna satisfaction. So the idea of spiritual economics is to take the same activity that goes on in our temple, but to expand it to a larger size, the size of a village, or can even eventually go around the whole world. Why not? Certainly possible. But we have to, you know, we just simply have to be willing. We have to, it requires our cooperative effort. Just like last night when I pulled out, you know, those $2 bills, right? Let's see, I have some money today. So, a 10 and a 1, right? Why, when you go to the store, you can give them this piece of paper and not this piece of paper? Huh? Why? You go to buy some milk and you give them here. Here's a nice piece of paper. Take this one.
Why?
Yeah.
It's what our government has.
It's got nothing to do with the government.
Well, that's why?
Yeah. Why will they take this one and not this one? What do you say?
Used to, but they accept.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why?
That's their means of exchange.
It's that says what the cost
is. So what was the reason that we had last night?
That we agreed that something.
Yeah, this one's worth this one because we agree. That's all.
Okay.
The government may say something, but people may not necessarily agree. I mean, there's many times in history where people, they just refuse paper, you know. Because it's just paper after all, right? But it works because we all agree. Because we cooperate with it. Now, we could make our own money, right? There's a lot of communities that make their own money. It's called private currency. There's several of them in existence now. There's more than 2,000 communities around the world where they use private currencies. And it may look, you know, that some piece of paper, they have different systems for doing it. So we can agree on this, or we could agree to a private currency, right? But if we can agree to this, can we agree to nothing? Yeah. If we will. It requires more cooperation. It requires that we give up our cheating mentality. It requires that we give up our sense of I and mine, that I'm going to get more and more and more. Right? So it's an economy. Actually, it's an economy of love. Giving. Simply based on giving. And the focus, the whole focus shifts to where we stop thinking that I'm going to be happy by getting. Because we all know that that's not true. We all, everybody here, we're old enough to have, we have experience enough to know that these things in our lives are not actually what make us happy. What real happiness comes from within. Comes from Krishna consciousness. And if we have Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter what the external situation is, we can be happy. And if we don't have Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter what the external circumstances are, we may not be happy. So, he's giving us a way to live in this world. And what we should do, we should take it and we should try to follow it. We have a wonderful scripture, this Bhagavad Gita. It's a great book. The problem is we don't follow it. Right? Because we're acculturated to an atheistic, materialistic culture, and we live differently than what Bhagavad Gita tells us. Consequently, our devotees, we have as much problems living in this world as everybody else. But if we give up sarva dharma prityaga, all these ways of living that modern society tells us, and instead, mame kam sharanam vraja, live according to how Krishna tells us to live, we can be very peaceful and happy. We can have what we need to maintain the body, and we can have Krishna consciousness. This is what Prabhupada wanted for us. Prabhupada wanted us to live in village communities so that those things that we need for survival, food, shelter, and clothing, they can be provided directly from the earth. You don't have to pay the earth money, right? You want some food from the earth? She says, no, $10 before I give you some potatoes. Huh? Or mother cow, you know? Mother cow says, no, $2 a quart. No. Out of love. Huh? Mother earth is giving out of love. Mother cow is giving out of love. Hmm? And that the spiritual culture is that love should be reciprocated. Krishna is giving us everything to begin with. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna is giving us everything to begin with. He gives us his body. He gives us this wonderful planet to live on. If we just take it without recognizing him, Prabhupada says, then we're a thief. It's meant to be offered back to him. So, Krishna gives us the food stuff from the ground. We cook it up, offer it to the deity. It's nice bhoga. Krishna accepts that, and he gives it back to us as prasadam. We accept that, and we offer it again to Krishna as the fire of digestion. And then Krishna, he reciprocates, giving us our life energy with which we can use to serve him. So this reciprocation goes on and on between the Lord and his devotee. And so this is how we're meant to live. This is the way Krishna's instructing us to live in Bhagavad Gita. If we do that, so much satisfaction and happiness we can have in the simplest circumstances. And this is what Prabhupada wanted for us, what he wanted for his society, to learn how to live such a nice way, reciprocating with the Lord, so that we can show other people in the world how to properly live happily in this world and at the end of life go back home, back to Godhood. This, what I presented tonight is actually going to be the second volume of Spiritual Economics. And it's also available on the internet. If you remind me before we leave, I'll write it on the chalkboard. Or I can tell you. It's spiritual-econ.blogspot.com. Anyway, I'll write it down there. Okay, any questions or comments? The secret?
Yeah, the secret is about people wishing things.
Yeah, people desiring their... Thank you very much.
Is it a new movie?
No. It came out last year, I think.
It was out a long time. Years ago.
1 or 2 years ago.
It's about manifesting. It's all these new ways.
Is it like a documentary or a book?
Yeah, I don't know how it came out because I didn't see it. I was in the Ukraine.
Yes.
It came out also as a book. The book's in the bookstore now. But it's the earliest version of that is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Right.
Maybe you read that book.
I read other versions of that too.
Yeah, there's many.
Yeah.
It's not new. It's the same idea is there.
Right. It's really a really old version too. I can't remember what it was. I mean, 1920s or something.
Probably.
Uh-huh.
So it comes out in a new version every now and again.
So did you say spiritual?
Spiritual-econ.
Dot
blogspot. Dot com.
So it's a dash.
Dash, not underscore. Dash.
I mean, whatever you wish for, it has to be in your karma to get it. You can't just get something because you wish for it.
Yeah.
You'll be a millionaire.
Right, but if you wish for it and it's not in your karma this life, then you come back in the future and get it. It causes you, it forces you to come back to this world again and again. This is a very important point that they don't say in the video. Right? If you don't get it this lifetime, you have to come back again. Oops.
Very dangerous.
Yeah.
Also, there's no consideration for a higher truth. You know, you just get what you desire.
Yeah, right.
A
better question is, what's the best thing to desire? If you can get anything that you want, what's the best thing to want? They don't talk about that either. Prabhupada talks about that.
What you want is to engage in Krishna consciousness, to desire that.
So the best thing to want, that's what Krishna's explaining here, as we discussed tonight. How to go to a place of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Never have to suffer birth, death, disease, and old age again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best thing.
So we can give to people, regular people also, by us being generous.
Well, think about how this works. In our families, right? Our birth family, for example. There's sharing going on. There's no buying and selling. And that may even be extended to our relatives. If they come over to visit, we don't charge them for dinner or begrudge them. We offer them, please sit down and eat. Or our friends, on a limited basis. Right? If your friend starts coming over for dinner every day, you might want to say, hey, wait a minute here. We're not clear on the concept, right? Are you family yet or not? Right? So as the relations become more and more distant, then we formalize our exchange. Right? But why should we do that? That's simply the culture that we're in. Right? If we understand from another perspective that we're all brothers and sisters, we're all one family, God is our common Father, then why should there be any buying and selling? In this volume, in chapter 4, I explain how this present system came about. We shouldn't think that our modern economy evolved simply by chance. Didn't happen. It was deliberately created, put into place, and actually so that one class of people can exploit the vast majority without their even knowing it. So we have the situation now where 2% of the people own 50% of the wealth in the world, and 50% of the people have 1% of the wealth. This is the result of modern economics. It's designed to create that result by that 2%. But it's not equitable. So how are we going to change that? We play this game called money. And here's the rules. Right? I'm the 2%. I win and you lose. Great game, right? Let's play. And you say, okay, yeah. I win, you lose. And I say, oh, too bad. Economic problem. Let's play again. All right? And everybody says, yeah, okay. Okay, I win and you lose. Another economic problem. 1930s, 1980s, 2008. Let's play again. And everybody says yes. Why? The game's rigged against the people. Why do we continue to play a game that doesn't work for us? When Krishna says, Sarva Dhammam Parityaga, this is what he means. Give up that foolish way of living. And instead do what? Devotional service. Just like we live in this temple, expand this temple to the size of a village or the size of a town. And everybody there can live very happily. Different game. And they can't exploit you. There's no way they can control you if you're getting what you need from the earth. This is what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted to teach us how to do this so that we could lead the world out of this economic bondage.
Well, of course, except you're bringing up that question, they own the land, so you can't just...
They don't own all the land. People do have rights to land to some limited extent. But the statistic here in the United States is that 97% of the people live on 3% of the land. And we do that voluntarily. We could also go back the other way. Of course, you're right, the game is rigged in such a way to force people off of the land. That was the policy of the United States government over the last 50 years to drive the small independent farmer off of the land. And the rule is, if you're a corporation, if you're an agribusiness, you can survive on the land. But if you're an independent person trying to make money by living on the land, you're not going to be able to do it. So the way to approach it is not to live on the land for making money. You live on the land to produce what you need. Then they can't tax you. What are they going to tax? You don't have any income, right? Well, you don't have to pay taxes. You can be more independent. They have their ways of trying to force the issue, but you know, ultimately, politics comes down to a fight. What?
Well, I was thinking about that when I saw that Sankirtan. You know, because one of the things that I really like to preach about is the agriculture and cow protection. And I know that in the agriculture, tycoons have that all pretty much. They've got the law so that the seeds are more dominant than the organic seeds. one seed can put a whole field of organic agriculture out of business, and then it changes that seed into their seed, and then the way the laws are set up, it's you owe them money. Then
the seed actually belongs to like a big corporation or something.
But it's like an illegal. Those seem like illegal laws against
the land.
There's a whole movement, people against Monsanto now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was really disappointed because I found out that the head of the Department of Agriculture for Mr. Obama is the head of Monsanto.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he has in control over that or what.
Oh, of course. It's just like in the economic department, it's all the heads of these investment banks. You know, they put them in the head of the government offices for economics. The same thing with the seeds. They're demons. They want to control the people. And if you control food, you control people. If you control oil, you control countries. That's the name of the game. Ultimately, it comes down to a fight. We're in a situation just like the Bhagavad Gita, where there's demons. The demons, but the fight, we're not going to fight with swords or guns, we're going to fight with the holy name. Krishna's present in his holy name. And by calling the Lord, calling the protection of the Lord by chanting his holy name, we will see. Krishna will actually manifest, the situation can change. But that's the only way. Because they're too powerful, otherwise you can't fight them. They control the money, they control the governments, they control the media, they control the universities, that control the whole thing. So they're very powerful, but they're not as powerful as Krishna.
Well, one time in Hawaii, when Monte was from England, and she said, "You Americans have such nips. All you have to do is boycott for a few days the supermarkets, and you can get all the slushy, yucky produce off the."
Well, that's true. Americans are
good.
They won't do anything.
Right.
Democrats are
good. But mostly they don't really know. Like, when I go out on Sanctum, I don't try to change somebody's religion.
Right.
You know, I basically, I'm preaching on this platform of protecting the land and the cows, and I tell them, you know, Krishna is a cowboy. And we're doing it all wrong. And how wonderful and how bountiful the earth is. The earth is a very, very bountiful. It's not necessary for us to.
That's why people can't do it by themselves on their own power. That's why it has to be this Krishna consciousness. It's the power. It's the only power that we have to get anything done.
But I was thinking all the laws.
Too weak and afraid.
All laws that are made from now on should be based. Because I can't remember what book it says, but actually the foundation of all religious principles is the land and the cows.
It's
the foundation of everything. So all laws all over the planet, if we want to change anything, the laws have to be. And it actually doesn't
happen.
But that's not necessarily true, because it could happen. All we have to do is get Krishna to want it to happen.
Well, yeah, true.
And
the third world
but
way
then we have honest. To want it to happen ourselves. It's in our desire.
We
create our own planet. So, I forget what I was going to say. What was I going to say? All laws that are made have to be the basis. If it hurts the cows, if it hurts the earth, then it's not a good law.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be worldwide. It has to be a worldwide, and then everything has to be revamped. And even if we think we can't do it, civilization isn't headed in the right direction. It's crashing. So it's actually our duty to point people in that direction. Well, this is the way we're supposed to do it. I mean, what would it be like if the earth was based on love?
That's where we're going. That's our job.
Yeah.
To manifest the spiritual world here.
Yeah.
And for that we have to follow spiritual economics.
I like that. Spiritual economics.
My book, Spiritual Economics. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just printed last week. So fresh off the press.
Are there several of them here?
Yeah, I've got 40 copies. Everybody can get one. Anyway, you can come look at it in after class. I also have some brochure for those who didn't go in last night. This is for our Gita God family of communities in Eastern Europe. As a result of my preaching in spiritual economics and Varnashram culture, we're developing a family of communities where we're trying to follow exactly Krishna's instructions to live simply on the land, producing our own necessities, and eschew the money culture.
Yeah,
well, there's a couple of devotees now in Alachua. They also want to they want to come in and work with me. So maybe they'll start a community in Alachua or near Florida, someplace. So, but basically, all I'm doing, I'm just repeating, I'm explaining what Prabhupada wanted us to do. But the very key part of this is the economics. We have not understood that, and in my opinion, this is why we haven't had much success in our farming communities. We mix the two cultures up. If we have to understand very clearly that this money business will destroy the Vedic culture. I'll explain more about the connection of spiritual economics and Varnashram Dharma on Monday night's class. What time is the Sunday program? What time is the program tomorrow?
Six, seven, and eight.
In the evening?
6:45 is the class.
5:00.
Okay. The program starts at 5:15?
5:00.
5:00.
It
begins with kirtan?
Yes.
Then lecture? Mm-hmm. And then prasad.
Actually, it's
6:45.
6:45.
Okay.
All right.
Any other question?
And what is this village in Eastern Europe? Where?
We have one village near Kharkov in Ukraine. We have one community developing in Lithuania near a small town called Ignalinas. There's another community in Western Russia near Rostov. And then there's another community in Moldova also. And then there's some other devotees both in Brazil and in Alachua who want to study these ideas more. So I call these Gita God. God is the Russian equivalent of Gram, Sanskrit word meaning place. So I wanted to call it Gita Nagari, but the devotees, they said, no, there's already Gita Nagari. So they said, we'll call it Gita God. So. All right, enough. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki.